Let's open up with a word of prayer and we'll get going. Father God, we love you, Lord. Thank you for our time here. Thank you for Ty and his words that he shared this morning, Lord. Thank you for Chuck and what he was talking about with this trip coming up. Pray that you would just be working in our hearts and minds, Lord. Allow us to know whether we should or shouldn't go, Lord, and just most importantly, allow us to have a willingness to preach your word and speak your good news to those around us, God. We pray that these things we're learning about wouldn't be academic, God, but they would change us and make us like you. Thank you for this time this morning. Pray that your spirit would be working with us here. In Jesus' name, amen. So we're marching forward. I'm actually really excited because I love to keep going and build. And I feel like we're getting to the place where we can start to build on a lot of the concepts we've talked about. Before I get into it too much, a couple things. If you want a book and don't have a book, we've gotten rid of most of them and ordered more and gotten rid of all of those. So I'm going to write on the board here the word book. And if you want one at the end, just make a little mark on the board here, okay? You can all use the markers. Just mark on the board and we can know how many more to buy, all right? Also, this is a reminder to you all, if you're not on the email list, we like to send out announcements each week with regard to what the reading is and maybe some things to think about for the upcoming class. If you're not on the email list, but you'd like to be, if you just, you don't have to write your name here, but just contact the office at church and let them know, and they'll put you on the bigger list, okay? There are probably 90 people or so who come to the class at some point, somehow, somewhere. So those are my reminders to you, all right? So who remembers what we talked about last week? Anybody was here last week? Or was here and remembers, more importantly? That's the bigger question sometimes. So we're launching into, and we started talking about, actually for the last couple weeks, the evidence objectively that God exists, right? So far we've shown that truth exists, right? To say that truth does not exist is a statement that defeats itself, right? So truth exists. And we can know it. At the minimum, we can know some truth, right? Then, objectively, we moved into the fact, the proofs of the facts, that God exists, right? So, I told you guys there were a few standard arguments for God's existence that have been used in the church for thousands of years, actually. Four main ones. There are a lot more than that, and I wanted to walk through a few of those with you. So we already talked about the cosmological argument last week and the week before, right? So that was our biggie last week, if you remember that. Anybody want to summarize that for us? The cosmological argument for God's existence. Just maybe in lay terms. It's cool. Yeah, Jonah. Yeah, so all things that begin to exist have a creator, essentially. All things that begin to exist have a cause, and the universe began to exist, therefore the universe has a cause. So we talked about what that cause looked like too, right? And so there are certain things we can understand about God just from the cosmological argument. You recall that? I think there's a lot of really cool things that we can think about with regard to God in that way. I want you guys to know that I haven't ignored the questions that you've asked me. So you remember the first week I asked you guys to give me your questions on 3x5 cards? And I have those in my bag. And so I've been looking at them, and a lot of them are repeats, which is great. And I don't have time to get through all of them, but I wanted to, at some point throughout the course of the term, cover some of them, all right? And I want to cover them as the topic comes up. So one of the things that was asked, which is a really good question, see if I can get this one, and I won't say who wrote the question, I think it's a really great question. Me paraphrasing the question is, I'd love to think and talk about why did God make the world? Why did God make the world? So evidence and logic says, quote, that it was made, created, I believe that, but to take it further, why? So if someone were to ask you that question, how might you respond? It's one thing to think about objectively the evidence for God making the world, but why did he do it in the first place? Why is there something as opposed to no thing? What do you think? How might you respond to that? So I'm going to be mean. I'm going to give you half a minute to describe or explain to the person next to you why you think that God made everything. By the way, this is more of a theological issue, less of a origins kind of an issue, but I think it's still really worthwhile to think about and ask. So talk to the person next to you, and how might you respond to that question? Don't feel bad if you can't. It's cool. As best you can. Almost done with your half a minute, so you better be fast. Yeah, so I'm thinking about all of the creation. So like the universe, including the earth and people. Yeah. Thanks for asking. All right. Was that easy or hard? Was it hard? Yeah, interesting. I think it's actually important and actually ties into this because if natural laws are all that there is, I think it's harder for an atheist to respond to this actually. Why is there something as opposed to nothing? Because we established last time that everything was made from nothing. Ex nihilo, right? From nothing. There was nothing. It wasn't like there was positive and negative energy. It wasn't like there was a fluctuation of mathematical constants. There was nothing, like zero things. And so everyone, air quotes, everyone believes that. There are a few scientists who try to get around that in ways. And yet I would say probably 99.5% of everyone, scientists and anyone else, at this point agrees that there was nothing, then there was something. Okay? To get around that, they'll talk about multiverse. If you are a comic book geek and you like the action hero films like, you know, the Avengers and X-Men and whatever else, or if you watch TV and you're watching like The Flash or those kind of programs, the multiverse is it. You guys have seen that? That's sort of now what's just in vogue. I mean, to make sense of this, there has to be a multiverse because you need time and chance to give you what we see. We'll talk about this. But you need time and chance. And so there's probably not enough time, and chance doesn't work well enough if all we have is this. So we need the possibility of an infinite this. And then in an infinite amount of time, with an infinite amount of chance, we'd get some world like our world. Is that fair? That's sort of the cosmic thinking of most people probably, because if you believe that, then you can get around the issue of God. The challenge is you don't really get around it because the laws of physics don't work that way, right? One, we don't have any evidence for that. Two, the laws of physics would ideally and naturally work the same way in the grand scheme of things in any universe, okay? The constants may change one to the other, but the ideas of how physics works would be the same, universe, ours, and whatever else. Does that make sense? A little bit, kind of, sort of. So you have the same problems with regard to you can't have an infinite amount of anything, time or things, right? You just make the problem harder, actually. If there's a multiverse, there needs to be a multiverse-making machine, for real. And so what made or who made the multiverse-making machine and put all those constants in place to get the universes that we see? And then all of those universes would start from something, right? And if they don't, they start from nothing. Well, how does that work, right? So if they start from something, this multi-universe-making machine, what made the multi-universe-making machine? Because the laws that we know with physics would say that machine would run out of energy and usability in time. Is that fair? The point is it doesn't work physics-wise, and there's no evidence for it anyway. But that's how scientists try to get around the problem, because we all recognize there was nothing, then there was something. That's the bottom line. So no matter what you believe that. There was nothing, now there's something. Okay? So if you're an atheist, I think it's hard to respond to the question of why. It's pretty hard to explain how, but it's also hard to explain why. Because there's no why in nature. Right? There really is no why, there just is. So how would you respond to someone? Tell me what you guys said. Anybody want to share? Steve?
I can share, but
yeah.
I think you know this, but there's two questions here. The atheist has no, they have no explanation for anything, for why anything exists, period.
Just that's
like
right.
You said.
That's right.
Whereas we can, the explanation is that God created. We can say that even if we don't know why he created. That's a much tougher question.
Yeah, so we've established that.
Okay.
Yep.
So
it's good.
I just want to know,
yep.
The apologetic thing is done.
Yep.
God created, and if they get to believe that, whether we can ever realize why he did or didn't,
yeah.
As interesting as that is,
yeah.
We have to confront God regardless of whether we know his motivations. My best thought on why he created is because he just loves graciously giving himself to other people. I think he just loves doing it. He enjoys it. I think he wanted to create people. He might have even anticipated sin, and he just loves. He's a loving being, and he just loves giving up himself to people, especially people that don't deserve him. He just enjoys that. There's an enjoyment in him in loving others.
Yeah.
So that's the best I can come up with. I've heard other reasons that they don't.
Relationship is what that gets to.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Yeah, and it's actually, it tells you something of God, right? Because for us to have the desire for relationship that we do with him and with each other, that has to come from something beyond nature, actually. You don't get relationship or love or those kind of things from natural laws, right? Those kind of things come from a mind and intellect. Fair? And so God can show love because there's perfect love within the Father, Son, and Spirit. That's how God can show the love that he does to us. Yeah.
Okay, so
Martha.
I think behind that would be a general principle that if you look at Mr. Day, okay, so God, the universe, the creation reflects God's nature and personality. First of all, in the Godhead, that goes what you were saying. I mean, God in the Godhead has communion, he has relationship. But he's a God of order. It shows everything about his nature. So
yeah.
That seems like a kind of basic.
Yeah, I mean, and it's in great part an expression of who he is. I mean, so we talked before, and I think I gave you guys this list. We can see from God's existence in the cosmological argument that God exists in and of himself. Mm-hmm. He's self-existent. He's timeless. He's immaterial, right? He's not made of matter. He's unenergetic, he's not energy, right? He's powerful, he's intelligent, he's personal, he wants something, so he does it. And we can see other things through the world that he's made, like love and relationship, those kind of things. It's actually really, really important. So part of this, a big part of this, is that we can see the character of God, and he shows and wants to share the character of who he is. And it actually gets into something we'll talk about next time, which is right and wrong. And one of the questions, actually multiple of the questions I had, I'm going to share with you guys so you can be thinking about it for next week. I love these. There are multiple people who asked this. Let me see if I can get it. This is really good. I love, love, love the question. Of course, now I can't find it because, yeah, here we go. Is God a good God? Do we define God's goodness based on a principle or observation? Is he good because he says he is? And that's the definition of his name, or what we see. So another way to sort of think about that is the urethra flow dilemma, right? Which is something good because God says it's good? Or does God say something and command something because it is good? It's actually a third option to that. That's the right one. But that's sort of a common thing to ask. So all the Greeks asked that thousands of years ago. All right, so we'll talk about that next time when we talk about good and goodness and how that shows that God exists, actually. So this is great. Anybody else have thoughts they want to share before we move forward with regard to the question we asked? Yeah, please.
We didn't answer the question. We came up with another question. And this
that's good. Always.
For a long time. What does it mean that God created us in his own image?
Yeah, so what does it mean that God created us? God created us in his own image? So, what do you guys think? What makes you, in part, a person? Not a human being, but a person. So part of this is because you've been made in the image of God. So what do you think? It's a good question. Beyond apologetics, but still a good question. Yeah.
One thing is we have the ability to make decisions.
Yeah, so you have volition and will to do something. You can choose to or not to do something, right? Yeah, think back to the beginning when God made Adam and Eve and he put them in the garden, all right? What did he tell them to do? Yeah, so certain things they should or shouldn't do, right? And in so asking and so saying, they were to be obedient to him too, right? There were things that he as God asked of them, so the relationship would be right between God and them, right? So relationship is the core here too. So part of it is will and freedom of will. And this actually is what caused humans to fall away from God, right? The freedom to choose to not be obedient to him, the freedom to choose to not have right relationship with him because we wanted something else because we're selfish people.
Another observation, too, is that with God in the garden with Adam, God asked Adam to name the animals.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's something very unique about us as human persons. So personhood, what type of beings are a person? Sorry, this is well beyond apologetics, but what kind of beings are persons?
Awareness of self.
Yeah, so persons have an awareness of self. So they can choose, they can think about thinking. Is that fair? So they can think about thinking. I've got three cats. I love and hate my cats most days. But my cats are very, very sweet and loving and catch all kinds of great things around the farm. And it seems like sometimes they're little humans, sometimes. Yeah, I know my cats don't think about thinking, right? There's something unique about me as a human being who's also a person. So I have will. I can cogitate about cogitation, right? So what else? I mean, God gave the tree of the knowledge of what? Good and evil. So part of it, personhood, is recognizing God's character and who he is and right and wrong. That's part of it as well. So this is actually a big part of it. So morality is a big part of it. And ethics, how we do right and wrong, is a big part of it. So my cats are amoral. I get irritated if one of my cats attacks the other, but they're not doing something wrong. They're just doing what they do naturally, right? There's no right or wrong there. They're amoral, where I'm not, right? God says in Romans that I recognize who he is, Romans 1. In Romans 2, I recognize right and wrong. So a big part of being a person is being able to choose, having a will, thinking about thinking, having a consciousness like that, and also understanding and enacting right and wrong. Steve?
Just on, I like how you put think about thinking, because it's funny you say it's not apologetic, but you'll get into the discussion we're all just animals and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So absolutely. Yeah, no, this is good.
I like, perfect how you said think about thinking, because people say, well, animals think. Morality, that's clear. Volition, you're right, and I'm trying to think of how to describe that, because obviously cats will make a decision whether they want to jump up on the couch or maybe they want to go sleep or they want to go eat, and they're going to make decisions too. but maybe rational volition.
Yeah, absolutely. Decisions. Yep, that's a good point. Yeah, it's not like a grasshopper chooses to fly or not fly away. Yeah. So
I would even argue
part of the, yeah, Caleb.
That it's not even necessarily that we have logical
volition. I just wrote logical down, so. Yeah, go ahead. Talk to me, Caleb.
We have possibly illogical volition because all animals just respond to stimulus.
It's a really good point.
In various ways. What makes it, what sets our free will apart is that we can choose to do something stupid.
Did you guys all catch that? That's actually a really good point. So we're not just the chemicals bouncing around in our brains. If that's all I were, then you can't hold me culpable for anything, right or wrong. You just can't, if that's all that I am. And the reality is that you can't hold me culpable for right and wrong, because I can choose to go against something. Actually, this is really cool when you think about it. I think part of what's really cool about human persons is that we'll choose to do these altruistic acts. So the really cool thing, if you guys remember 9/11, you remember where you were, what you were doing at the time? The thing that was really striking to me was seeing the towers aflame and seeing the first responders heading into the flames, right? Like, if you see someone, like, you go against that selfishness, right? You do these things that are ultra ego, actually, right? You're going against your selfishness. You're doing something for someone else that totally puts you in harm, right? Now, you can see this sometimes in the animal world if a mother is trying to do something for her cub, likely mother bear or something like that. But in general, it's something that humans can choose to go against, right? So like you're saying, Caleb, I can choose to do something that seems totally illogical, putting my life in danger. Or I can use logic and still make a decision against it. Where if I'm an animal, I'm really just doing whatever is coming in my head because of the chemicals that are banging around there. Is that fair? Yeah.
That is in a person that wouldn't, I mean, we talk about language in animals, but there is a difference in the use of language in a person. Well.
Yeah, yeah, fascinating. So human beings can be persons. Who else can be persons? Assume for the moment that I'm not talking about space aliens.
Angels.
And the demons, of course, which are just fallen angels. What else? We haven't exhausted the list. God, the persons of God, the Father, the Son, the Spirit, right? So God in three persons. Is that fair? Okay, cool. Not quite sure how I got on that, but this is good. Oh, right. So what does it mean to be made in the image of God? So I think these things are part of the core. Anybody else want to add to it? I want to go forward, but anybody else want to add? What's that, Peter? Love. Yeah, right. Yeah. So I think, yeah, there are, I think it goes under sort of morality and ethics, but there are these virtues we can only have as a persons, right? So part of that is love, which flows from the character of God and who he is, right? So we're made in his image, so we know what love is because it flows from the character of who God is. And actually, it's actually a really important point with regard to why we believe God exists. Because if there's no God, the concept of love makes no sense, actually. It's sort of a meaningless concept, interestingly. Yeah, anybody else want
to? So, to get the original question answered, why did God create the universe? Would it be fair to say that he, because you put him under the category of a person, yet you said he wasn't material.
Yep.
And he wasn't unenergetic.
Yeah, see, these things don't need that.
Was he lonely?
No. It's actually a really good thing to ask. Yeah, it's a really good thing to ask. And the reason that we know he wasn't is because there's perfect relationship between the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. Right? So that comes to be later with angelic beings and people and the things that he's made. And yet God had no loneliness because there's perfect love between the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. So this is actually really important. God didn't need to make us.
Right?
God wanted to. Yeah. And it actually goes to this. Right? God wanted us and wanted relation with us. It's actually a really cool thing. You can only have relationship or want relationship, really, in a meaningful way if there's God.
Why God created us was to worship him.
to worship him. And that's what we do in relationship with him. Yeah, so God gets worship and the glory, which he deserves in the relationship. Yeah, absolutely. And a part of that is the love that he gives us. So why do we worship God? Why is he a God that we want to worship and should worship? Because of what he's done for us. Right? Is that fair? It's not because he's God and he's all powerful and I have to worship him. God does not want that. When you actually think about it, like, God doesn't force you to do anything. Right? God gives all people exactly what they want. You think about it. If you want relationship with God, you choose to give your life to God, you have that relationship. If you don't want God, God's not going to force you to love him. Right? And so he allows you to live a life apart from him. This is essentially what hell is. Right? At its core, the most important aspect of hell is an apartness from God. And that's what we want. Like, you hear people ask this question all the time. How does God condemn or consign anybody to hell? He doesn't. That's not what God does. It would be unloving for God to force someone into heaven in relationship with him when they don't want that. Right? So God allows people to truly, to freely choose relationship with him or not. And if they don't want that for eternity, that's what God gives them. Right? Okay. So, I would say, like, so my way to explain this would be relationship. It really would be. I mean, God in his perfect love and relationship that he had even before time wanted a relationship with us, which is really, really cool. And we can see that through him, and most importantly, through his son, and what actual relationship looks like. Is that fair? That's, sorry, me responding to one of the questions, but we kind of got a lot of really cool things from that. Is that good? All right, so let's march forward. I wish we had like 16 hours a day for this, and you guys are happy we don't. It's great. I'm like, no, please make it go away. What's that?
What do you think about man in God's image in a physical sense?
Talk to me about that more, Jim.
I would say a lot of non-believers who read that would think immediately, well, we look like him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, before the incarnation of Christ, there was no materialness to God, right? So before he made the universe and everything, there was no even God the Son in the incarnate form, right? So when he made us in his image, when he makes everything, the comparison is a God who's totally immaterial without any energy, that kind of thing. So, yeah, so I think I'd probably stray away from that as a concept. I mean, I don't think it's a big part of it. It's not. I don't think it's a bad idea. I just think because I'm comparing a time when there is no thing, right? Me being made in his image is so much more than that. Not sure how else I want to parse that out. Josh,
could you say that like our like attributes or like aspects of our physicality are like
yeah, okay, so maybe that's more what you're thinking, Jim.
Here are things like the like God's like face or God's like hand or like,
yeah,
like bodily things, which wouldn't necessarily make sense that God physically has those, but I guess you could.
So those are the Old Testament's anthropomorphic ways to speak of God so people can understand a concept.
I guess I was more thinking of it as if those are like attributes or aspects of God which he like put into the way he physically made us.
Yeah.
As in like our hands are like in the image of like some aspect of like the physicality is.
Huh. Yeah, so I can't say I've ever thought that through. It may be. Yeah. Fascinating thing to think about. I think of some things like about the mathematic perfectness of God and asymmetry, those kind of things. I think there are some things about aesthetics that probably flow from the character of God. This is beyond the Bible. Please, just me thinking about it, speculating. Pete?
Well, then what did Moses see when he asked to see God? And he had a back and he had hands. And there's something physical for him to see because he wasn't supposed to see it.
Yeah, so God speaks in the burning bush. God has some physicality to him there. That's this, right? when God takes human form, God the Son, it's this. So we see humanness of God sometimes in the Old Testament, and some would argue that's actually a pre-incarnate picture of Christ.
Wouldn't it be in the senses too, Dave? Like, God can see, God can hear, we can hear, there's like a symmetry in the understanding. Maybe he doesn't have eyes.
Yeah, right.
His vision.
Yeah, that's I think it probably ties into Josh and Jim, what you guys are thinking about.
But one of the problems with that, I mean, John, thinking through this,
yeah, please.
Cats can see, right?
Physically,
so
yeah.
The image. I'm trying to think of, when we say image of God, what is it that makes humans unique versus other beings? And that's why I think we need to go back to these types of things.
Yeah. Well, part of this uniqueness is probably like to dig deeper in what it means to see, right? As opposed to like what a cat does to the environment. Like, what are we really getting at? Probably not the sight factor, but something else, an awareness that's a more deep awareness, right? Yeah. Well, I think we can get there, though. I think it's fair to, like, dig a little bit.
It's the difference between understanding what's going on around you and just having, like, a simple stimulus.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Okay, last call. Anybody else want to make any comments? Jack, do you want to? Because I think this is actually really important. A theological concept as well.
What comes into my mind is the end of Ephesians 5, where Paul, after talking about marriage and the image of God, says, this is a mystery.
Yeah.
For all that he knew and all that he had seen, his testimony in Galatians.
Yeah.
He still comes away with this word mystery, and we don't want to take it and say, well, it's a mystery, I can't think about it.
Yep, that's right.
But it's a mystery that will engage eternity to explore.
Yeah, I love that.
Because God's thought, God's expression of himself is so much larger than what I can get a hold of. But as a child of God, the hunger to pursue that,
yeah,
just like the various pleasures that we enjoy, we pursue them. Thus,
yeah,
the knowledge of God and the idea that no matter how much I know of him, he's larger than that.
Yeah.
He's bigger than that.
Yeah, we're so finite in comparison, and we can come to approach some things that I just erased, that I can't point to now anymore. These things, we can approach those, but that's right.
Of saying, well, and I've heard people say this, well, that's just too big, I can't know that. Well, that's,
yeah, we don't want to punt.
The purpose of it is, yep, to dive in.
Yeah, because we want to know God and worship him as he is. And so what he's revealed, we can comment on. And then there's so much more that once we get to heaven and are totally, fully sanctified, we'll keep learning forever.
I've always thought that the idea of ourselves as image bearers is magnified by the fact that God the Son chooses our form,
yeah,
with which to rescue us.
Yeah. Yeah, he condescends to us.
Yep. To take our form,
yep,
which becomes, in the backward sense, a testimony of what God thinks of us.
Yeah, and by the way, to add to that thought, that doesn't mean that our human bodily form is worthless. It's not. It's absolutely very, very important and valuable to God. We know that because someday when we're resurrected, we'll get a new body, right? So our bodies are really, really important and meaningful, right? So we don't want to like fall into the, we're just spirit soul either. That's not what God wants. So when I say condescend, it's not because our body is worthless. It's because he's coming into a world of sin and brokenness. Because when God made these bodies originally, he said what? They were good. Right, and for God to say it's good, that means something, right? Martha, before we go on.
Yes. I was going to say, there is some aspect of this image of God discussion that has bearing on the fall as well, because the pattern was God revealing, communing with man. Man was cultivate and guide and be over the animals. Mm-hmm. So it should have been an obvious clue when an animal started communicating. Hmm.
Yeah.
And because that wasn't the order that God had established,
yeah,
in this image creation.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Fascinating. All right. So, Pete, is this okay for now? Pete Adams, is this okay for now? Right. We can get into that later if we need to. But as we move forward, so we talked about objectively the cosmological argument. We heard from Jonah what that was. And that moves us into the argument by way of what? What did we end last week with? Remember?
Theological.
Yeah, design. So teleological argument. Right? So this actually has two parts. But if you had to put this in lay terms, what's the thrust of this? There's a lot in the reading. I don't want to get into all of it. But what's the thrust of this argument? How do we know God exists by the world around us? Jonah?
Every design has a designer. The universe has a design. So the universe has a designer.
Did you guys catch that? Yeah. So every design has a designer. The universe has design. Therefore, the universe has a designer. Right? So this actually comes into two parts then. There's the design of the universe, meaning the cosmos, the galaxies, all the planets, the stars, right? And there's also the design that we see resident within life. Okay? So there are two component parts. So we can think of design in both those realms, actually. Okay? And if you're following along in the book, this is chapters 4, 5, and 6. All right? I could take weeks on those three chapters. I won't. So I want to move forward. But we need to think about these two component parts. And so from a deductive argument standpoint, someone would have to show us that every design does not have a designer, or there's no design in the universe. Is that fair? Do you guys all have that? Are we cool? Okay. So to sort of rip this argument apart, someone would have to like deny either the first or the second point. Okay. So what kind of things do we see in the universe that show us design? And again, we could talk about this for hours and weeks. But in the grand scheme of things, what are some things? Pete?
One would be all the laws of rotation and revolution and all the things that go on in all the different solar systems and so forth. There's a pattern to everything.
Yeah, so I'm going to paraphrase that. I'm going to say natural laws are very specific. Is that fair? If you guys have done any study or remember your study from high school and college, et cetera, you remember that all those laws you learned in chemistry, physics, et cetera, have lots of component parts and there are specific constants, okay? So there are specific physical constants in all the laws of nature that we know or study. So the speed of light has a specific value that has to be just so, actually, for everything to work, actually. Like the gravitational constant has to be just so. Like these things have to be exactly as they are to permit life on Earth to be. Even things farther back at the beginning of time, such as the gravitational constant, has an impact on how fast the universe expanded when it exploded, right? By the way, as a core, God started everything. So we're going to get into, over the course of the next couple weeks, a little bit about evolution. I don't usually dig into it too much because my overarching statement with regard to worship and believers is I don't care. And I can flesh out what I mean by that, but just as a little heads up, there are lots of various views out there with regard to how God did what he did. Okay? Lots of views. I have lots of friends who are believers on all ends of the spectrum, both ends, and everywhere in the middle. Okay? That's okay with me. Now, I have certain beliefs about how God did what he did, and I think it's important to think about that. But there's a core that we as believers should understand and grab hold of, latch onto. And that's that we all believe that God did it from nothing. So when you read the Bible, the very first verse is what? Very first verse. In the beginning, what? God created the heavens and the earth, right? We all agree with that. Is that fair? And we can see from science that he did this ex nihilo, from nothing. So no matter what you think about the how, or what you think about what yom means or how long a day is, in the end, we all agree that God did it from nothing. Is that okay? I want that to be the thing I hold most. All right? I think it's interesting to talk about young earth, old earth, young life, old earth, young or old earth, old life. Whatever. I think those things are fascinating and they're worth talking about. But in the end, we all agree to that core. I said, okay, please leave understanding that. All right? That's a core. As we begin talking about these natural laws and the universe, sometimes people will start to bring evolution into this. This is wrong-headed from the beginning because evolution doesn't have anything to do with the universe and how it was formed. Evolution, strictly defined, has to do with life, okay? So I really don't want to talk about things that shouldn't be spoken of, technically. All right? Is that okay? So we're going to get into that a little bit. But technically speaking, whenever someone says something about evolution, whether it's micro or macro, it has to do with life. Because it's essentially change with time and chance and natural selection. That's really what they mean when they talk about evolution, not how the universe came to be. Yeah?
I guess this is a corollary to your natural laws.
Sure.
It's just astonishing to me of how well mathematics works to describe nature.
Yeah, right?
It is so simple and elegant. You know, everybody knows the equation E equals MC squared.
Yeah.
It's very simple, but what's beneath that equation is what's profound.
Yeah. That's a really good point. So I like math a lot. And I remember in college, I was taking a physics class. And I had friends who were taking physics as well. And depending on what you wanted to go into, there were two major branches you could take of physics. There was algebraic-based physics, and there was a calculus-based physics. And I chose to take the calculus-based physics because it was easier. It's not why I chose to do it. But once you got into the physics, you realize that the math is so elegant and straightforward and makes the most sense of the physics concepts. It takes a lot more work, in my opinion, to derive the physics equations from the algebra than it does from the calculus. And the point is this. It seems like calculus is more complicated and more challenging, and yet it's actually so elegant and works so smoothly that the equations and the way things are derived is so smooth and seamless, it's almost like this work of art. Like, if you actually talk to mathematicians and scientists, like, they'll use those terms. It's the most amazing thing in the world. So the point is, if you take physics, take a calculus-based physics. But it's actually really cool. And so there's something here, I think it's easier, actually. There's something here about the constants in nature. So if you read about this, some individuals would argue that there are 122 natural constants that have to be just so for the universe to support life and to be as it is. That's a lot of them. And it's not just that they need to be close, they need to be almost exactly as they are. So if you were to alter the gravitational force by 1 to 10 to the 37th percent, that's a 1 with 37 zeros after it, right? It wouldn't work. We couldn't have life. We couldn't have the universe that we have. It has to be that specific. This is actually a really big deal. You actually stop and think. It's just one of the 122. Jonah? Absolutely, the analogy, right? So the percentage is so vanishingly, it's hard for us to get what this number is. But the analogy is, I think Michael, is it, Behe or Behe says that? Yeah, so I actually went for lunch with him years ago. Do you remember? Aaron and I went for lunch with Michael Behe. He's a great guy. But his analogy, so you should read The Black Box. I just like wanted to say that, chill, because I'm like all special. So I was like, well, Behe, I went to lunch with Behe, so. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Yeah, good. He's a really neat guy. Anyway, the point is, he makes the analogy that, I don't know why I did that. He makes the analogy that if you go into the Sahara Desert and you're blindfolded and you have to pick out one marked grain of sand, you do it 3 times in a row and get that piece of sand. Right? I mean, it's so vanishingly small from a mathematical standpoint that you're just not going to do it. Yes.
1 over 10 to the 10 to the 250th.
It's actually 10 to the 138th is the number. Yeah, if all of these were to be accented at the same time in the proper way, the probability is 10 to the 138th. Now, that's a big number, right? It's actually really high. But think about, I mean, it's a big number. It's smaller than your number by a substantial amount, but it's still a really big number. So How many atoms are there in the known? How many atoms are extant inside the universe that we know?
10 to the 80th.
I think 10 to the 78th-ish. Yeah. So you're like way off. Right. So roughly speaking, right, there are far, 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 far fewer atoms in the known universe, right? So this is a really, really big number. Not as big as Caleb's, but a really big number, right?
I think that's probably some weird quantum thing happening.
Yeah, don't know. All right, is that okay? If you guys are reading in the book, you can look at it. It lists like 10 or 15 of them, but there are a ton of them. Okay, it's actually really cool. The point is, our universe is made just so to support life and to be as it is. So this is from the standpoint of the universe. What might an atheist respond? How might he or she respond to this? Yeah.
This is why I think you've already brought it up. You've already talked about this.
Okay.
Before, but I'd like to get your thoughts because this is something I have to think through. This is just not my area to speak to all this scientific stuff. But this is where I hear the multiverse.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
It's not as much in the cosmological argument, because as you've said, that doesn't do anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it might do something for the design if,
yep.
Again, here's one of the arguments, if the speculation is correct that we have a multiverse of virtually infinite amount of universes out there, well, at least one is going to be perfect.
That's right. Yep. So if you guys all heard Steve, his point is this is where the atheist will respond. Well, the multiverse, if it exists, is such that clearly I can have even more of the universes than this number, right? So eventually I'll get one that works. Is that fair? Like if I can just keep spawning all the universes I want, eventually I'm going to pass this number. Fair? I mean, like that's exactly what they'll say. That's totally the argument most of them will say. So one, they'll say, you know what? We'll admit there's some kind of a designer. We don't know what that is or what he or she looks like or what it looks like, but we'll admit there's got to be something, even though we can't tell. So because we can't tell what that looks like, it's beyond science. So we're going to say, you know what? Maybe at best that'll move us into agnosticism. We can't know exactly what that designer looked like. So some will say that, actually, and some pretty well-known scientists have gotten to that point. But the other major point is this one. Let's just spawn all kinds of universes and hope that one works, right? Throw it at the wall, let's see if it sticks. What's your response to that? Yeah, so the first thing that you should say is, where's all the evidence? If you're gonna say that, I wanna see the money, right? Show me the money. So we don't see that at all. It's speculation, but it's beyond science, is that fair? So you're looking at the data, and now you're using scientism to make sense of this data. So
we would never be able to see that, right?
What's that?
We would never be able to see a multiverse, right? Because we have to go beyond the universe.
In the Flash, people come from the other universes all the time.
In the Flash. In the Flash, Steve, they come from other universes. Duh. Come on, Steve. Get with the show. Yeah, so like Caleb is saying, there are some theories and thoughts out there about how you could study or detect or find, I think. You could, if we have time at some other point, sort of talk about that. But one thing is I want the evidence, okay? What's two? We talked about it before. It's actually a really important point. With regard to how nature works. So if we're talking to scientists, we're using science, right? So if you're talking science, don't go beyond science, right? Let's actually talk about it. So if you're talking to a scientist and they say, well, what about the multiverse? I'm gonna stick in science, right? So that just takes the problem up a notch, right? Because if you have a multiverse, it had to either be eternal or it had to start, right? And we've already shown that you can't have an infinite actual anything. So then it had to start. So it brings us to the exact same problem we were to before. Who or what made the multiverse machine? That's exactly within science how you talk about science. Fair? You have to actually always do that. So don't get sidetracked, right? Don't let someone take you outside the bounds of their box and how we're thinking about this. We're actually using inductive, deductive, abductive reasoning to think about this. And so you can speculate and postulate, but it has to be within the confines of these rules and the rigor that we establish in the beginning. And if we're using science, let's stick with science. And so I'm saying I look at the data outside of me, and this has to be either intelligent or non-intelligent, right? Can't be anything else. It's either nature or intellect. Okay? So I look at that data, and what best makes sense of the data? An intellect or something within nature itself? Well, all that we see shows us that all that we have came from nothing and can't have come from nature, because nature was created at that point of nothingness. So the only thing they can do that has to be supernatural, outside of nature. Is that fair? That's just using science and logical thinking.
And let me, if I yeah. could, can I add on to that?
Please.
Because again, while I agree with what you said, that might be, you're reverting a little bit back to the cosmological argument. And saying that something has to have a creator.
Yep.
This is arguing that because of design, then we'd almost be implicitly conceding, okay, if there's a multiverse,
well,
you're right.
So can I get to that? So yeah. if we thanks, Steve. If we just stick with this argument for
sure.
design, I think there are three things. One, I want the evidence. That's still fair. Yeah. Two, it would still need fine-tuning. I'd still need fine-tuning, right? I can't avoid the fine-tuning part. And thirdly, I can explain any event away then, right? I mean, literally, if I have enough time, I can explain anything. Does that make sense? That actually frees me from using any logic, philosophy, or anything else. Given enough time and chance and universes popping into being, I can explain any event. Literally anything. So it's just beyond the box of science. That's what bugs me. Is that fair? All right, so man, just not enough time ever. I blame all of you for this. That brings us to life and the design we see in life. So before we leave, I want you to think about, you don't have to share with the person next to you, but what kind of design do we see in life itself? Do we see design in life? Absolutely. So what? We'll talk about this next week. We'll talk a little bit more about evolution next week, and then we'll move into the moral law and how that shows us God. And that brings us to a lot of the questions that all of you have asked too, which is good. So what? How does life show us design? Pete?
At the biological level.
Pete raised his hand. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead. It's fine, Tom. Go ahead.
So at the biological level, it's extremely complex.
Yeah.
Something like the bacterial flagellum, when you look at the structure of that, oh my Lord, it's a tiny motor, chemical motor.
Yeah, so a great book for you guys to read.
It can't be by chance.
Yeah.
Wrong, but it just doesn't seem naturally logical to me.
So a great book. Please, please read this. Go buy it. It's awesome. It's pretty cheap. By Michael Behe, who Chuck knows really well. Really, really good, because it talks about the molecular basis of life, which is, I think, the most important component part, actually, when it comes to thinking about how there's design behind it. Pete?
There are certain rules and conditions and so forth that allow life, and if something happens to those, then whatever it is dies. So if you have
yeah.
a person who goes in the water and they're underwater for 10 minutes, there are certain rules that says your chances of being able to regenerate life is very, very limited.
How long can your brain live and not have oxygen? You guys know? Well, what's the length of time?
Maybe
3 to 5 minutes. So 4. That's it. Not going to come back from that. Can't. Outside of God, right? Okay, so there's something amazing with regard to the specified complexness. That's the term for next week. Specified complexness. There's a specified complexity in life that can only happen from intellect. There's information in life. In the DNA, in the cell, there's information. A ton of it, more than you can possibly imagine unless you've really looked at it. And this is the take-home point. Originally, when naturalism came to be with Charles Darwin and others, the cell itself was essentially a black box. It looked just like this amorphous, weird blob. It was a mystery how life worked, but no one knew anything of the inside of the cell. They knew a little bit about anatomy and like the gross standpoint, right? Like the muscles and the bones and how bodies are put together. As an aside, at the U of M Med School in the early 1900s, there were 600 contact hours of anatomy for the med students. 600 contact hours. Now there's probably around 100 total. We still need to know anatomy, and yet we know so many other things, and medical school is the same length of time, oddly, right? That we push some of that out of the way, a lot of it, and focus on the inside of the cell and the information content there. So my point is, naturalism in the beginning had no knowledge of this specified complexness, none. Now we do, right? And we'll talk about that next week, okay? Any last thoughts or comments? It's really cool stuff. Jack, if you wouldn't mind saying a word of prayer for us to close, please.
Father in heaven, we thank you. Thank you for who you are and that you reveal yourself and you teach us how to think. And we pray, Holy Spirit, that our thoughts would always resonate with the person and the work of Jesus Christ and the sacrifice he has made to bring to us life and hope and confidence in this world in which we live. We thank you for your mercy and love today. Pray that you would cover us for the week to come. We ask it in Jesus' name.
Amen. Thanks a lot for being here. If you want to talk to Chuck, he'll be out by the
table.
Yep, with his stuff. If you want to talk to me, I'll stick around for a second. I'd love to chat with you guys more. I know this class is fast, and you may not have a chance to ask all the questions. I'd love to stick around and talk to you guys, okay? Have a good week. Thanks for being here.